You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing with Professor Dan Flores, his new book is Wild New World, the epic story of animals and people in America. Henry David Thoreau, certainly a man celebrated for his literary skill and his observation talents, wrote very carefully, this is the 19th century, "When I consider that the nobler animals have been exterminated here, the cougar, panther, lynx, wolverine, wolf bear, moose, deer, the beaver, the turkey, I cannot but feel as if I have lived in a tamed and, as it were, emasculated country. I take infinite pains to know all the phenomena of the spring, thinking that I have heard the entire poem, and then to my chagrin, I hear that it is but an imperfect copy that I possess and have read, that my ancestors have torn out many of the first leaves and grandest passages and mutilated it in many places." I read that aloud, Professor, because it's extremely sad and very accurate. In your telling, you fill in the parts that Henry David Thoreau moves quickly past as he celebrates a pond. And in considering North America, I ask the big question because you've been dealing with this story for quite some time, Dan, and I'm privileged to speak to you about it, having read your book. Is this understanding that Thoreau had, is he isolated? Is he a loner at the time? Or was this always there in America and just overwhelmed by the politics and the prosperity of the age?
I think it was there, although it required particularly sensitive people to grasp what was happening in America. And one of the reasons it was not easy to grasp is because the ideas, the ideologies that old worlders brought to the America didn't allow for the possibility of the extermination or extinction of animals. Their notion coming out of the old world was that the earth created perfectly by a deity, and every creature that had ever existed would always exist. So there was no possibility until science began discovering the bones of creatures that clearly weren't around anymore in the beginning of the 19th century. There was no sense that extinction was a real possibility. So it's the rare person who I think sees this. William Bartram, America's first great literary naturalist, is one who sees it and writes about it. And Thoreau, I think, in particular, in his wonderful way, his literary way, is able to capture this feeling of enormous regret. I mean, he had been reading the accounts of those first Europeans who had arrived in the Americas in the 1600s and wrote these wonderful descriptions of all the animals and how many there were, all the richness. And he realized that here he was 200 years later, and almost none of those animals was still around. They were gone. And so, as he put it in that passage that you read from, it turned out, he said, "I realize I'm that citizen whom I pity. Some demigod has come before me and plucked from the heavens the best of the stars."
I want to celebrate the beavers. We've not mentioned them much until now. I am lucky enough to observe a beaver construction in the springtime in a wetland. The beavers are missing to the scale that were critical to the development of North America. Do our rivers, our lakes, our ponds, are they all creation, leftover creation of the great beavers of the last 10,000 years? Do we have them to credit for it, Dan?
So many animals, and the beaver is a great example of this, but so many animals that we ended up losing are reducing to such small numbers that they couldn't play a role in the ecology of the continent anymore, were large-scale engineers of the ecology of North America, at least before old world or Europeans arrived. And beavers were one of those. We think there were probably as many as 60 or 70 million beavers in North America at the time Europeans arrived. And the result of their presence was to create a much more moisture-laden, watery world, really. But beavers are the perfect example to describe the next stage in the story, because what old worlders bring with, along with their idea of human exceptionalism, along with the idea that their holy book, as Genesis puts it, has delivered all other creatures up unto humans, old worlders bring with them this idea of a global market economy focused on the wildlife riches in particular of North America. And one of the consequences of that is that an animal like the beaver, which produces a very rich pelt that can be used in various kinds of clothing and fashion. I mean, the beaver hat is probably the most significant of those. Very early on becomes a target, a commodity target of the global market economy, along with scores and scores of other animals. But the beaver is a target that really allows us to create the first great corporation in American history, John Jacob Astor's American Fur Company. And it's an animal that we go after so assiduously that by the middle of the 19th century, the beaver population has been reduced to such an extent that the beaver hat and various kinds of clothing items based on beaver fur, that's no longer really possible. And so we have to turn to other animals instead. That's sort of the story of one creature after another in American history, is as they become commodity targets of the global market economy, we began wiping them out. And there's, of course, no action on the part of any government in order to stop the process of it happening. It's just regarded as one of our franchises, as we call it.
Philosophy is more critical here than the gunshots. And we need to attend. The professor mentions John Jacob Astor and the Astor House and Waldorf Astoria and the riches of the 19th and 20th century in America. There's another philosopher, however, much venerated, but critical to this story, Adam Smith. What does Adam Smith write that is not meant to, but becomes extremely damaging to wildlife?
The Wealth of Nations, his most famous book, happened to be published at exactly the time when the United States has its birth, its separation from Great Britain. And Adam Smith believes he has happened upon what he thinks of as a natural economy, which has to do with his sense that humans have gone through, he didn't use the term evolution because he precedes Darwin, of course, by a century, but Adam Smith had a sense of humans having progressed through time. And he believes that our natural instincts for a kind of selfishness is part of who we are as a species. And that intrinsic selfishness can be employed to power a great economic engine. The idea is that if you act in your own self-interest, the ultimate result of that is beneficial for larger society itself. And Americans, of course, embrace the idea of the wealth of nations wholeheartedly. It becomes one of our intrinsic philosophies in American history. And as I said, it just happens to have its birth at exactly the time the United States does.
Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. For you younger people who still have brains that can absorb that wonderful poem, Dan recommends that you recite it every time you enjoy yourself with a glass of wine or some spritz, spritzer on wine or a beer. Dan, the recognition of Linnaeus's genius, does it come to the natural world? Do the men who, and it's dominated by very well-to-do people who are processing this harvest of animal life, do they understand the Linnaeus's genius to break down the animal kingdom in this fashion and that we're part of the chain of life?
It takes Western science a bit to quite embrace Linnaeus. I mean, several other naturalists around the world had their own notions of how you categorize all these species. And this becomes necessary because of the discovery of America, because there are so many new creatures, birds, reptiles, mammals, that Europeans are unfamiliar with. And so the idea is we need some system, and Linnaeus happens upon the one that supersedes all the rest, kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. Linnaeus puts together a system of descending kinship where he begins with the idea that everything is separated into two or three large kingdoms, the plants, the animals, and then those ordering techniques proceed down to the point of species. And what this enables people to do all over the Americas, whether you're in French Louisiana or the Spanish Southwest in California or in Anglo-American Northeast, is to have a consistent method of classifying all these new species that these naturalists in America are discovering. And so it basically enables everybody to speak the same language so that everyone refers to the American bison as bison, bison. Its genus name and species name are bison.
I'm speaking with Professor Dan Flores. The new book is Wild New World, the epic story of animals and people in America. It's time for Thomas Jefferson and the Louisiana Purchase. I'm John Batchelor.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.